Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a podcast named Tim, a father and son movie review podcast. Each week we talk about a variety of movies. This week it is iconic duos. That's the theme. So we're going to be doing The Hateful Eight and Good Will Hunting. So actors that always work together, or actor, director, or characters, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of how we matched up. We're available everywhere podcasts are. So please do leave a rating and review on your audio platform of choice. Visit podcastnamedtim.com to check out all the different movies we reviewed, social media, all the social medias, and of course, YouTube. We have movies that we talk about in addition to these. We have Power Ranger stuff, Star Wars, a video of this podcast. I think I have hit all of my marks. I am Zach. Dad, how are you today? Good, sir.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. I'm excited to talk about these two movies, mainly because I basically watched both of them today as we were talking about on air. I procrastinated a bit, but had an interesting morning of The Hateful Eight and Good Will Hunt. Quite a pairing to go together. But that's okay. What else have you been watching this week?
I watched Mayor of Easttown.
And how
M-A-R-E, not M-A-Y-O-R.
Oh, yes.
With Kate Winslet. A very dressed down Kate Winslet.
Right.
Good.
I like
it. Yeah. I see. It's up for a bunch of awards. I see a bunch of Emmy Awards and stuff. She was definitely good in it. Pretty creepy story. Some of it kind of predictable, but not enough of it was not to where it kept you going on through. And I hate little towns. I've always said I like the little town, but it would have to be, I don't know. I'm sure there's some little towns that are nice. This is one of those Pennsylvania, Ohio, that whole area. It's in Pennsylvania, but that whole area where they got those little towns stuck in those little hamlets in the middle of the hills. Everybody knows everybody's business. Everybody, you know, I don't think that whole everybody knows your name and everybody knows your business is, that doesn't sound good to me. Everybody's related somehow and everybody's, and I'll tell you one thing, this place had a teenage pregnancy problem. Good lord.
Okay.
But it was, it was a good little mystery. Had Evan Peters, I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
Just a bunch of other people, but it had some. He was one office alumni, and it also had the guy who played Roy was in it. But it was a good movie. Mini series.
Mini series, yes, that's the thing.
Mini series, yeah. I can't think I've really watched anything else. Oh, okay, I did watch something. So they've been advertising this. I've been reading about this on social media and news platforms and Netflix's new dating show. Familiar with it?
Nope.
I just had to watch it once. I had to see exactly what they did with it. It's called Sexy Beast.
Oh yes. I forgot that.
So it's a mixture of The Bachelor and Masked Singer,
and
the people put on masks of creatures and animals and date. And it was, it's awful. It's not even awful. It's worse than awful. But it's not even a train wreck that I watch. You know, Bachelorette's a train wreck as it is.
Right.
And we do watch that, and I do get some amusement out of that one. But this one goes so far beyond. It's supposed to be, I guess the premise is supposed to be looks. You're not supposed to be dealing with looks. But that's all they talk about. Hey, I'm in this because everyone loves me because of how good looking I am. And I can't find anyone to treat well. So you kind of know. I don't know. It's the first one we watched, the girl, it was a girl and three suitors. The girl was dressed as a demon.
Yeah,
and the one guy was dressed as a Greek statue, which was well done. One was a baboon and one was a mouse.
Okay.
The prosthetics, the makeup is fantastic. It's really good makeup jobs, and I can't imagine these poor people are having to do this. I guess they're having to put it on three or four times for the different dates and the different segments that they run.
Right.
So that in itself, just watching, you know, watching a lot of makeup tutorials that I watch and all to see how long those prosthetics take to put on. I give them credit for being able to do those, but it is it's undescribable.
Okay.
That's about it. I think the rest of it was just continuing on with my office and my Dallas, and that's it.
I have decided to rewatch the Star Wars sequel trilogy now that they have been completed. I saw, you know, The Force Awakens. I saw all of them a couple times in theaters. I think The Force Awakens is the only one I've actually watched out of theaters. And now that there's been some time, I thought it'd be nice to watch them close together. And so I've watched The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi within this last week. In a couple of days, I'll be watching Rise of Skywalker, watching it with wife, just to see, you know, if my opinions had shifted, or obviously one of the largest complaints that they had lodged at the movie that was lodged at Disney was the lack of planning. I just wanted to see, like, you know, does this work as a trilogy? I'm halfway through it, or I guess two-thirds of the way through it, and it's very sad that in many respects the movies are so lifeless at this point, because I know where it ended. I've said this before and I'll say it again, that the best thing that Disney has ever contributed to Star Wars is the Force Awakens trailer. Because that trailer was the ultimate moment of hope.
Dashed.
And The Force Awakens, I liked when it came out. And I like it now still fine. But because of where I know things go and the ball that was dropped, it kind of actually hurts that movie a lot. Because I'm like, oh, here's... It was fascinating to see, like, look at all these wonderful questions and characters they left us with and ideas that could have been capitalized on, and the fact that in every instant they made the wrong decision was fascinating. And there were little things. Like, I went in with, to be fair, I went in with the intention of, I'm going to try and nitpick this. Like, I went in with that specific purpose. Like, I'm not going to enjoy these. I'm going in to nitpick this and see what I can. I'm breaking it down to build it back up. And which is what everyone did with the original prequels, and I've come to appreciate some of them for what they are. But there was, like, little things, like The Force Awakens. There's two or three times in that movie where they say the word old friend or old ally, and it's someone we've never heard of before. They're like, oh, it's my old friend. Just, oop. And just little things like that. And I was watching The Last Jedi last night, actually. I was doing that instead of these movies. And I watched a bunch of videos about it. I was like, I'm going to go back and watch some other people's theories, videos, and stuff. And I know this isn't a Star Wars podcast right now, and I know you haven't been prepped, but do you remember the Holdo stuff? Like, the whole, like, Leia gets taken out and the other woman comes in and she has to, Laura Dern, and she's kind of putting Poe in his place, and then he has the and all she had to do was tell him the plan.
Yeah.
And I hated that originally. And I was like, maybe I won't hate it as much this time. I actually hate it more now for two reasons that came to mind. One, it is a smack in the face to the point of Star Wars. Because a lot of the movies, Star Wars is a trope. It's a trope fest. That's what it is. It's a movie of tropes. And one of the tropes in all of the, at least the original trilogy, and I'm pretty sure in all of the prequels, is at one point in the movie, all of our heroes sit together and we go over the plan. Right. And in Star Wars A New Hope, we sit together and we talk about the Death Star run. And in Empire Strikes Back, they sit down together and they all talk about how we're going to escape Echo Base. In Return of the Jedi, we all get together and we talk about how you're going to go down to the planet and we're going to do this. And the fact that this movie goes, we're purposely not going to tell you the plan so that we can create this fake division. I was like, you're not even using the tropes of Star Wars purposely. It's like the movie wanted to purposely not do Star Wars tropes. Until the end, when they didn't have the fucking balls to make Rey turn. And also, it would have been better had it been Lando or Leia, because they're characters that we understand. And we know that Lando has a history of being a coward. So maybe he is trying to run. Maybe he's given up. Or if it's Leia, well, Poe's done a mutiny against our hero. How do we feel about it? It just
makes sense.
It just, creating this new character for this purpose was a poor use of that character. But there's other issues as well, but just some of the ones that stuck out. And I can't wait to watch The Rise of Skywalker and continue this journey. But that's what I've been doing this week.
Yeah.
So enough Star Wars.
That was a complete waste of time, but all right.
You know, I will give them this credit. There's a couple of moments where I listened to Snoke talk, and I was like, you know what? I could see Palpatine saying that line. So I will give them that much credit. I'm like, yeah, all right, I buy it a little bit more now.
All right, you say so.
Yep. Well, let's start with Good Will Hunting. then we'll move to The Hateful Eight. Before we do that, quick moment to pause. Yeah, work from our sponsor. So Good Will Hunting came out in 1997. It has a runtime of 2 hours and 6 minutes, R rating. 8.3 on IMDb, and 98 on the tomato meter, and a 94 on the audience score, of course, directed by Gus Van Sant, our second Gus Van Sant movie, the other one being whatever The Trees of Life or whatever that Matthew McConaughey movie was. Of course, written by both Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, and starring them, and Rob Williams and Stellan Skarsgård, I guess that's how you say his name. And it's about a boy genius, a genius who has had a troubled life and he is coming to terms with who he is. This is my selection for the week. I had never seen Good Will Hunting. I'd always heard about it. I picked it because Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are an iconic duo together. What did you think of Good Will Hunting?
Well, it was wicked good.
Wicked good.
It was wicked good. I mean, it's, you know, I liked it when it was originally out. Look at what it gave us. It gave us Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Ow. So you can also then say it gave us G. Lee and Jersey Girl. And
The Great
Wall.
I
digress. Yeah. I think this movie is one that, because of its timing, so we don't have to go back into black and white movies and older movies, I think this movie should be studied by all film students for character writing and character building and character turns, and it does the ultimate in taking your character from point A to point B. Will starts, you know, totally defensive about everything, and just he just winds down, breaks down, builds up, and you know, there's a lot of movies that I don't need all that from, but this one, I think this was probably, I liked it had an happy ending.
Yep.
And, you know, some movies I think the people are so, you know, they got on my nerves so bad that I don't care. But this one, I'm glad that it did. this is another one's movies that the background of it is just as fascinating as the actual movie. Just the, I mean, it was bought by one studio who was not, were not going to use Matt Damon and Ben Affleck at all. Had no desire. They wanted Brad Pitt and someone, I forget who that was. It started, I mean, the first original writing of this and movie was going to, was more about the government wanting him. It was going to be kind of like an E.T.-ish kind of thing where there's this kid that's so smart. The government was going to take him and use him. I'm glad they got rid of that and kept it more about him and his therapist. And originally he wasn't going to head to California to find Skyla. That was a done deal. So I'm glad that all that, of course, unfortunately, a lot of that was because of who ended up with the movie was, of course, Miramax and Harvey Weinstein, who, he's made some good movies. And whether he was a piece of shit or not, he did think that it should be them that starred in it because they wrote it and knew the characters and all. So that was good. Robin Williams, of course, who won for it, was just, fantastic. In a non-comedic role, thought he did really well. I still like him in Dead Poets Society a little better, but I do like him in this.
He's got more. I don't think people give him the credit he deserves because he's got this. He's got Dead Poets Society. He's got 1 hour photo.
He could play about anything he wanted.
Yeah, I mean, Bicentennial.
If he could tame himself down long enough to do it.
Yeah,
and he could. It was. I mean, it was really good. I don't think anyone. If there was any weak point, it was probably Casey Affleck, just because I always pick on Casey Affleck, the Ben wannabe. It's a good movie. It's got great turns, with character. I mean, and you can they come right at the right time and. You can see them. You can see the character when they get the epiphanies of changes, and it's a great movie.
Yeah, it was excellent. It hit at the right moments that you needed it to hit. It did what all good movies need to do, which is make you feel something. At first, about the first 15, 20 minutes, I was just like, oh, yeah, here we go. Ben Affleck and Matt Damon doing their Boston accent bullshit. And
some Southies.
Yeah, I was like, this is going to be another one of those. Everyone says it's good, and I'm going to have to, bang the table and tell everyone why they're wrong. But, I really, really enjoyed it. I really got into it, and the acting performances in it from everyone were just stellar. And there was no getting around that. I can't think of a bad performance. I wasn't sure how it was going to end. I thought that the girl was going to die. And he was going to, realize that he shouldn't have fucked up. And
right. With
I thought that's where we were heading. Because, I don't know, the way they kept throwing, little moments between them. I was waiting for her to die and him to have to realize that he had had all these great moments with her. I thought it was an interesting take on the boy genius character. We've seen those hard exteriors and bad troubled lives, but they're a genius. But there seemed to be something unique about it in that there was it was the cockiness of it. Normally those people are hiding and sheltering, and it was just this is easy for me. I don't give a shit. I'm going to burn this piece of paper right in front of you. Let me do your homework so we can go to the batting. Like this,
that was his whole shell. His whole wall of the adult.
But that shell, I appreciated that shell.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's almost one of those movies where it's too good for us, where it's like, I was also, because it's just hard to say, we've talked about it before, a good movie is just a good movie, and it is a good movie, a bad movie, you can talk about stuff. But I was a little worried at the beginning that we were going to have a, belly of the archer or of the architect moment where I was going to be like, I don't know what any of these people are talking about, and they are way too smart for me, and I'll the quantum combative mathematic blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh shit, here we go again.
Yeah, I just ignored that stuff.
I was like, yeah, they're doing math. But this movie handled that well, unlike the other movie, The Belly of an Architect, which was name-dropping smart people and references, but to the point where it pushes its audience. This movie did the exact same thing, but in a more comforting way, in a more casual way for a casual audience going.
The original screenplay, it wasn't even math, it was physics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Physics, which I definitely would have been. This movie is way better than Citizen Kane.
Thank God. He had to get your I'll get you one in. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a story that's been done. But it's up there in the, like I said, the boy genius hard shell movies. It's up there as far as a kind of how I talked about last week with Iron Man, where it's like, here's exactly how you do this, beat for beat, and executed it well. This is that one. This is, you got to do this, and you got to do this, and that's, there's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes there's only so many ways to make a good movie, and I love the rivalry between between Skarsgård and Robert Williams, and how each character. I guess that's the best thing about this movie. The best thing about any movie is the characters have a point of view, and they live in that point of view, and it doesn't matter who's right or wrong, because that's just, this is how this person lives in the world. I'm important, and you're angry at me because I have a medal. And the other person's going, no, I hate you because you're an asshole. It's just... And right. They're both probably right.
Oh, absolutely. So,
and it was interesting. This movie came out, and we watched it this week because I had a bizarro moment this last week.
You solved the math problem on the board?
No. I had one of the few times in life where you can literally sit and see divergent paths in your life. I had one of those moments, and it was fucking creepy. It felt like The Matrix. Like,
this,
I was
by
like,
the TV already.
No. This, I don't think I told you about this. We have not talked since this happened. So Friday night, I guess it wasn't Friday. Sometime this week, I went out to dinner with my family. Just a random chance. We went out to dinner. We went to a place we never go to. Sat down, had dinner. To the table next to me, exactly next to me, was somewhere I had interviewed with and didn't get the job. It was who would have been my boss, my boss's boss, and the person that got the job ahead of me. They were sitting one table away from me at the same restaurant, somewhere they should have never been. And I sat at the table with my family. I told Allison, I was like, you know what? It's funny. I know we don't believe in like destiny and stuff like that, but this is kind of one of those weird clicky moments where I was like, I wasn't supposed to get that job because I wouldn't be having dinner with you two right now. And it was really fucking weird that I was like, this feels like a glitch in the Matrix moment, because there's literally the table next to us. So it was one of those weird moments, and that's what this movie was about. You know, you can go have your big ass job and all your accolades, or you can go see about a girl. That's what life's about. Those are your choices.
Right.
So.
And in real, if this was real life, you could not have had a better therapist for particular patient.
Yeah.
Like, you know, kismet. That's a once. I mean, Yeah, that was exactly who he needed at that time. And
yeah, no, he was from there. He understood him. He understood.
Yeah, he's an ass beat. He didn't have a good childhood.
Yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, like you said, I do think, I don't know what this, what the, maybe I'm wrong about this. Was there a big explosion of people being interested in therapy in like the late 90s? Because you have this, you have like The Sopranos. I'm pretty sure there's some other movies. Like, it seemed like it became more of a pop culture.
Became a little more. People talked about it a little more.
Yeah.
It kind of came a badge of honor that you were in therapy. Everybody kind of bragged about therapy. Yeah, I'm in therapy.
Yeah.
All right. Who's your therapist?
Yeah. I just, it was a weird timing for that. I'm like, oh, there's a lot of movies and stuff about that. Like, late 90s, early 2000s.
I could never get a therapist to talk to me.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought this was great. I'm very happy that I watched it, because it was one of the movies I'd never seen.
Yes, it's an excellent movie. I had forgotten how good it was.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm assuming you saw it in theaters or at least once. Had you seen it more than once or just?
I think I saw it like probably. I probably did one of those movies and then when it came out on video, watched it again.
Okay. I was.
I haven't watched it since then, so it's been a long time.
Well, I thought it was excellent, but before we move on, I did want to check. All right, it was nominated for Best Picture.
Didn't win that.
It did not win. Here was the nominees, and you're going to be able to tell who won, but I want you to tell me if who won is correct. So, L.A. Confidential was nominated. Good Will Hunting, The Full Monty.
That was funny, but it shouldn't have been the Best Picture.
As Good as It Gets. And Titanic.
Ugh.
So I think you know what won.
Oh God.
It's Titanic.
That's sad that they went up against Titanic. Because it definitely would have won Best Picture if it hadn't been for Titanic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It won them best original screenplay.
It won best original screenplay and best supporting actor, and I think there might have been another one. That's it. Best original, best screenplay, best.
It was nominated for a ton of stuff, but
yeah.
Titanic, it looks like, kind of took that year home.
It looks like it was Titanic, Full Monty, Good Will Hunting, and LA Confidential. Those were kind of the big ones that year.
Confidential is boring.
Well, you know what's weird about Titanic? And it's good, don't get me wrong. But
overrated.
It's one of the weird times that Hollywood and the masses, like normally like Avatar or a Star Wars movie or a Marvel movie, you normally don't get that box office banger. With, Best Picture. I mean, there's probably been very few movies who probably raked in all the money and did that at the same time.
Right.
I mean, even movies like Star Wars, just interesting. Interesting.
And I think Good Will Hunting made a ton of money. Didn't have like a pretty low budget.
I would imagine. I mean, you're hiring nobody Ben Affleck and nobody Matt Damon. Yeah, budget of $10
million. $10 million, yeah. Probably made like 200 some million.
Yeah, 225.
So why did we ever get Good Will Hunting 2?
Yeah, where was that at? Well, we got Saving... Maybe Will Hunting... Well, never mind, it wouldn't work out. Maybe, it just made me think of, what the next year Mr. Damon was in Saving Private Ryan. So he had a... That's a pretty good start to a career.
Definitely.
That is not bad. Okay. Well,
nope.
We'll go ahead and hop to your movie, which is The Hateful Eight. Came out in 2015. R rating, 2 hour and 48 minute runtime.
That was R rated?
What? I'd like to see Tarantino make like a PG movie or G movie just for shits and giggles. 2 hour and 48 minute runtime. I believe longer in theaters because they actually had intermissions and stuff and overtures. But 7.8 on IMDb, a 74 on the tomato meter, and a 76 from the audience. So a little low for a Tarantino film. Of course, written and directed by the man himself, starring all of the people that are normally in Tarantino movies. Samuel Jackson, Kurt Russell, Jennifer Jason Leigh, who was not, Walton Goggins, Tim Roth, Michael Madsen, Bruce Dern, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know how to say his name. Damien Bircher? Bircher.
Works for me.
Yeah, Zoe Bell, yada, yada. All the people. All the people you normally expect. And a little appearance from Channing Tatum, who I did not know was in this film. This was the last Tarantino movie. I'd seen all of them except for this one. It's about Wyoming winter. There's some bounty hunters that are taking a prisoner to Red Rock, and they get stuck in a snowstorm, have to hang out at the haberdashery, which is a great word. We should bring that back. And there's a bunch of people who you can't trust, potentially. Everyone's kind of out to get everybody, and who's going to survive, and who's going to be the good ones, and where's it going to twist and turn? I'll go first, since this was your movie. You picked it, of course, because of the Tarantino Samuel Jackson connection. This is a top four, maybe top three Tarantino film for me. It is, in some respects, this and Jackie Brown are the most un-Tarantino of the Tarantino films, in some respects. This was paced excellently, was written beautifully. Kind of as I said earlier, all the characters, they all were real people who you didn't need to know whether they were telling the truth or lying, because you knew they were saying it for a particular reason. The music was amazing. There are very few things I could fault in this movie. I watched a couple reviews right after. There's one little thing I could kind of agree with, but we'll get into that. What did you think of The Hateful Eight?
Well, I liked it better this time than I liked it when I watched it the first time.
Yeah.
Because the first I put it, I mean, I have a hard time ranking his movies because they're all hard. Have an individual reason that I like them, or you know, this satisfied this today and that satisfied that yesterday. And so, but overall, I really liked it more this time than I did other times. And maybe I just paid more attention to it. Like I said, the music's fantastic. The sceneries were, you know, besides the snowplow tracks, were fantastic. Which I don't know what else they wanted them to do. People fussed about that. What are you going to do? You can't have those people. They had to plow the snow. I'm sorry there were no snow plows during that time of the history, but get over it. It's just things you gotta do sometimes. Characters, you know, as always, his characters.
Just
everyone's unique and different. They're almost all scumbags. Even the ones you like, they're still scumbags. Yeah. They're just a little less of a scumbag.
Yeah.
Love Kurt Russell. God, Kurt Russell just, I don't know. Him and he's fantastic. I'm glad that Samuel Jackson got, he wasn't necessarily the muse this time. He was a little more of the guy in it.
Yeah. Top billing.
More of a part. Yeah. It's a little more of a part for him. I mean, Jules, you know, he definitely had made the movie, but this one he actually got to sink his teeth into.
Mm-hmm.
It was just great. Walter, I love Walter Goggins.
Yeah.
I've really gotten to, I found him in The Shield. When I watched The Shield, he was like the number two scumbag in that show.
Right.
And he did it so fantastic. He's really a good actor. He can really play. You know, Tim Roth was Tim Roth. Michael Madsen. I feel like Tarantino has him in a box somewhere and then just pulls him out of the closet. You know, like a Christmas tree that never gets undecorated. Just whenever he needs that character, he just opens up the closet, pulls Michael Madsen out, and sits him down and says, all right, be Michael Madsen for a couple hours.
Now, to be fair, I could have used a little bit more Michael Madsen from this film.
always, always. You can always use a little more Michael Madsen. You know, Bruce Dern, his little part was, I mean, even Zoe Bell pulled her weight. What's the part she had in there? Well, yeah, everyone was great. The movie was great. The scene was great. Yeah. The haberdashery was fun. You know who worked in the haberdashery?
Who?
Lamont Sanford.
Yeah.
And Fred Sanford went to go buy some haberdash.
Thank you.
Yes, that's I love that episode. But anyway, yeah. Yeah, I looked to try to pick it. I don't remember why I didn't like it the first time. I feel like it wasn't that long. It was okay. It wasn't like a.
But it should have been long, and it should have been slow. It's in the winter Wyoming.
Right.
It's supposed to be slow and long.
You needed to feel that. I can't remember why, and I didn't mean I didn't like it. I think as soon as I got done watching, I went, well, that's around Jackie Brown. Jackie Brown, I still go back and forth on.
Jackie Brown's in the bottom for me. I made a list. I left it over somewhere. I made a list of mine. I was like, let me sit down and think about these for a minute.
Yeah, but see, you'll put Death Proof in there, which
absolutely Death Proof's in the bottom.
Be in there. Death Proof is a fantastic movie.
Do you know what else is in my bottom three?
What's that?
Inglourious Basterds.
See, I'm not in love with it.
Yeah.
Love Christopher Waltz in it.
Yeah. But that's it.
If you took him out,
But my top two, I mean, Pulp Fiction, Kill Bill, those are my top two. I kind of go back and forth on which one I love more. But I was sitting there thinking, because third has always been Reservoir Dogs for me.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I was like, is this better than Reservoir Dogs? And
that's a debate I've seen quite a bit.
I don't know. I will say what's interesting is it's got some Reservoir Dogs in it. It's got some Django in it, obviously, because the Western and everything. And he even said at one point that it was kind of going to be a sequel to Django. This is a better Western than Django. I mean, Django's its own thing.
Right.
It's a Tarantino movie that happens to be, you know, a period piece. This is a Western.
Yeah.
And
dirty people in too many clothes.
Yeah.
Drinking nasty coffee.
Well, what did you think of Tarantino's reasoning and his what lighted his light in this movie? The Thing, which we reviewed for this show. He said that was his the thing, and he
with
said
Kurt Russell in it.
He's with Kurt Russell in it. He said that's the only movie he showed to the actors, and that's what inspired him. It was The Thing, and his opinion.
Yeah. Well, they're stuck in that same area with bad people and people not knowing who's who and who's doing what. And yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can see that. I'm just glad it's got made. You know, this is the one that Tarantino almost didn't make.
I know. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that script came out. I mean, it was not like pieces. It was a full working script got released.
Yeah, I'd forgotten all about that.
Yeah, he called people, said, I'm not doing it. Luckily, Samuel Jackson and Kurt Russell and Jennifer Jason Leigh kind of told him, you've got to make this. This is too good not to make. I mean, they probably didn't want to, you know, lose the paycheck or their notoriety for it.
Yeah.
We came close to not getting this one, and I think at the time I was like, but see, I don't like Western, so that might have been maybe that's what I didn't like about it at first. But
this is one of the few Tarantino movies you and I have not seen in theaters together. I think since when I became of age to see them, I think we've seen all the other ones together.
Except for maybe Reservoir Dogs. Did we see that?
No, we didn't see Reservoir Dogs together.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't think we saw that together.
Well, I'm saying, like, because when I reached...
Well, I don't remember when that came out.
Oh, that came out first.
I don't know when, though. I don't know what year that was.
90?
Oh, I would have taken you.
Yeah. Well, beginning with Kill Bill, I think we have seen all of them since then.
Oh, yeah.
This is the only one we didn't.
Something happened with this one. I don't remember what it was. We just couldn't quite get it together. And then I think we just kind of, it was during Christmas, I think. I think it was a Christmas release.
Maybe.
And I don't know why we just didn't.
Well, 2015, if it would have come out a little earlier in the fall, that would have been a very busy year for me work-wise.
Maybe.
Maybe.
You know, maybe that's what it was. Maybe I was gone for Christmas, and when I got back, you were already headed to State Capitol to do your stuff. Yeah.
It might have just been like a weird timing. But, I also don't remember. I'm not saying a lot of his movies get promotional stuff, but I don't really remember a lot of promotional stuff behind this at all.
I do.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. And I don't think any of it sold me because it looked like a dirty Western. It was good. It was a good movie. Good dialogue. This one, I see, and I'd love for this to be a play or
that's what I've heard.
This and Reservoir Dogs is just, would take hardly anything to make them a play.
Yeah.
I'd love to see those.
So the one criticism I saw, and I would agree with, is at the end of the movie when the reveal happens about who the bad guy and or bad guys are, there's still a lot of movie left. And part of the appeal of a whodunit is that slow burn of eliminating options.
Right.
And we had to go back in time then, and we got our little time jump so we could just kind of see how things.
Right.
It could have been better with that, pulling that along a little bit more.
Yeah.
But
I don't remember exactly when it, how much was left afterwards. It does seem like it did have to eat a little more film than probably needed to afterwards.
But
what's your favorite reveal?
In this movie?
Yeah.
You go first. Let me think about it.
My favorite reveal is that the Lincoln letter is fake. That was hilarious.
That was good.
And in fact, the way he just laughs like, you idiots. Why would you ever think that I would have a real letter from Lincoln? And it's worked so many years. It was so legendary. Everybody knows about it. Everybody's talked about it. People just want to see it and feel it. Look at all that it's got him through and saved. That's hilarious. Mary Todd is calling me. That's a good touch.
That's right. Old Mary Todd.
Brilliant.
I'm probably going to name this episode that. I don't know. I don't know. I want to watch this again, to be honest.
It shocked you that Channing Tatum was under the thing, right? You didn't know anybody.
Yeah, but just the fact that Channing Tatum was in this movie, how about that?
And just the fact that he got under there knowing he could be under there for days. As he told them, let's don't rush this. Let it go as long as it needs to go. And so he was willing to get up under there and stay for as long as he could.
I know it's weird to think, I didn't think Tim Roth was going to be a villain this time. Because I was like, they've already done that in Reservoir Dogs. So I'm like, he's not going to have Tim Roth be the guy again.
I would have been all right if he had really been the hangman and not been.
Yeah. And I actually, because I was, when they had the three, I was like, all right, I was like, the Mexican guy is too obvious. I had a feeling it wasn't going to be Michael Madsen because he's Michael Madsen.
Right.
And I was the same thing with Tim Roth. So I was like, you know what? We're going to get, I was waiting for the next turn. There's something else. We don't know. It was going to be someone. They were going to explain it away. It was, it was Samuel Jackson or something the whole time.
Right.
Or some shit, I was waiting for something of that nature. And, that's just a good. It was just a good ass movie. Now, important questions: was Chris Mannix Was he the sheriff of Red Rock?
Yes.
You don't think it was bullshit?
No, because in the credits he's billed as sheriff.
Oh, it is. Okay.
But no, I really think he is.
Did Samuel L. Jackson? Did whatever his name is, Captain? What is it? Major? Is he a major?
Major Warren. Major Captain.
No. Yeah. Did Major Warren have that man suck his dick?
Absolutely. Or was he just,
you don't think he was just fucking?
Absolutely. No, I think he absolutely did.
Okay, I thought he was just fucking with him to get him to grab the gun.
No, I think he did too.
Okay.
Out on them trails a long time.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
We're not worried about that. They didn't consider it a homosexual act unless you did it. If you had it done to you, that's just you, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to think that he did.
Okay.
Oh, that story and the way he tells it is hilarious.
It was amazing.
And I also think he killed as white people as long as he could, as many as he could.
I was with that story. I will say there was one little letdown in it. I was waiting for him to throw a line out about the mom or the dad or the orchard or something. Something that only the dad would know,
right,
that the son would have known. So he would have known.
Right.
It was... That's what I was waiting on.
He knew he was too easy a mark. He believed whatever he said.
Yeah. But, I really, really enjoyed this. I should say, of course, it does connect to the rest of the Tarantino-verse, whatever you want to call it. There, of course, is a pack of some red apples that are... Red apple tobacco is smoked in this and hand-rolled. There's also another connection. I don't know if you looked it up.
No.
Eli Roth's character is the great-great-grandfather of a gentleman from one of the characters from Inglourious Basterds. One of the British characters.
Oh, really?
They have the same last name, and I guess Roth had confirmed it at some time that they were actually descendants. So we did have...
No, I did not know that.
Another connection there. I think there was some other Django connections, if I remember correctly, as well. Because they are, you know... roughly around the same time and
right
connected.
Huh.
Did you see one of my favorite bits of trivia about this movie?
Well, I don't know.
About the guitar.
Coco. No, I don't know.
So the guitar that Daisy Domergue uses to sing Jim Jones at Botany Bay, which is a great song, by the way, was on loan. It is a high-valued antique. It was on loan from the Martin Guitar Museum and worth $40,000. There were six replicas built for being used on set for other things. Kurt Russell used the real one when he did the destructions. He was, I guess, in character and didn't know that the replica had not been put in place. And so her reaction to him destroying that guitar is real, and that museum has said they will never loan any more guitars for any movies.
Are you serious?
He destroyed a $40,000 antique guitar. That's real.
Whose was it?
It just says an 1870s high-valued antique.
Oh, just because of the year, okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. That's funny.
That was the real deal he destroyed.
That's pretty careless, or was it on purpose? I can see Tarantino just saying, don't tell him, Melissa.
Yeah, let's just do it.
I can see him doing that.
It says Kurt Russell was not informed. Yeah, so that happened. Funny. Yes, I thought that was...
I have never heard that. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, these were both good movies this week.
Yeah, this was, I mean...
A banner week. And this movie is also better than Citizen Kane.
Yes. Yes. I know I kind of hinted at it. And if you think about my list I gave to you earlier, is this better than Django? They're different. They're very different.
I really like the actors in. See, I love,
I love Kerry Washington. I love Christopher Waltz. I love Jamie Foxx. I love Leonardo DiCaprio in that film. But
and even Samuel Jackson's role.
Samuel Jackson was amazing in that. But here's my one thing why I'm giving this the credit over it. And it's weird to say, I like The Hateful Eight more because it felt like less of a Tarantino movie. It felt like, you know what, I can make other things.
So I haven't really understood what you mean by that. I think it feels like a Tarantino.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
the flashbacks and the characters and
I think the pacing of it and the I think the music of it, it felt less like he just picked, you know, from his favorite 60s and 70s music.
Didn't it win for music?
I think so. I think it did. For original, which you saw about the music, one of the main themes in it, right?
No.
Oh, well, then I have some more trivia for you, sir.
Uh-oh.
One of the main pieces for it, I don't remember which one, I think it might be that main one, was actually music that the composer had made for The Thing. And then they didn't use it. And they put it on the soundtrack, but it was not actually used in the movie. And so it was unused The Thing music.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was pretty, I mean, if you think about it, there's that one thing that's really creepy, got that really ominous mood to it, that music. And yeah, it was supposed to be for The Thing.
Hmm. Well, I think we watched two films this week.
I would agree with that. There's not going to be too many weeks where we're going to top this. But maybe
well, that's our own fault.
That's yeah. Well, don't get me wrong. We've also had other weeks where we're not going to get much lower either. So next week's theme, we talked about it, was going to be anti-heroes, bad boys of cinema. And my idea was with Suicide Squad coming out, we take a look at some anti-heroes, some bad guys that people love to hate. What did you pick? I have my, unless you want me to go first.
I cheated.
That's fine.
I didn't feel like watching two movies this week. So we're watching something I just watched last week.
That's fine.
And I want you to watch it because I want your opinion on it.
Okay.
So you know what it is, right?
No, I don't remember what you watched.
Gunpowder Milkshake.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
I want to know because I'm stuck on it.
Okay.
And I watched it again because I want to get a definitive feeling on it before I watch it again.
Okay. I'm going for another movie that is supposed to be a film and one I've never seen and is also on Netflix currently. And we're going to do There Will Be Blood.
Often that.
Yeah. So. Lewis? I thought about going with the obvious. Actually, do you know what originally made this theme come into my head? Deadpool. But I hadn't seen the movie in a long time, so I couldn't say that he was definitely a bad boy or an anti-hero. It was RoboCop.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, I haven't seen it in forever. And then
I told Alex, he was like, so you're doing Deadpool, right? I was like, no.
Well, then I was going to go for the obvious. I was going to go for Tony, for Mr. Scarface himself, Tony Montana. But I was like, man, it's too. I was like, we'll save that for another day.
Have we not done Scarface?
Mm-hmm. No, we've not done Scarface for the show. So, right. But There Will Be Blood is what I went with instead. And whatever, Gunpowder Milkshake. It's a great name for a movie.
It is.
There Will Be Blood's a great name.
There Will Be Bloods.
I hope there's blood. I'll be very disappointed. You know me, I'm a very simple man.
Yeah, if it says there will be blood, there better be blood.
The Hateful Eight, there was eight hateful mofos in this.
Well, he blew Channing Tatum's face off.
Yeah, yeah. Was Channing Tatum, was he in Django too, as well?
I don't know.
Because Jonah Hill was in it, right, as one of the Klansmen.
Oh, that does sound familiar.
Was Channing Tatum one of them?
I don't remember.
I think Channing Tatum might have been one of the Klansmen in the movie.
Sticks him in little parts here and there.
Now we need, what we need is now a top billed Channing Tatum. Tarantino movie. He can be in his Star Trek movie. He'll be his Kirk.
I'm going to pass.
Oh, yeah, is he a good actor?
No.
What is he?
Pretty boy.
Right, but he's got more than just, he's got good comedic timing. He can do action, if I remember correctly. Funny, good looking.
Middle of the road. He's all right.
All right, all right.
That's it. That's all I got.
That's all you got? Well, yeah, no more. That sounds good to me. Well, I'm looking forward to this week. I'm going to watch something.
Now, this may be a skip a week. We'll have to see.
That's fine.
Because we have duties a week from today.
Yeah, I know we are busy on our normal recording day. But we'll figure that out.
And I have in-laws coming in.
And I got a house to myself for a couple days, which you would think would mean I'm going to watch these, but what it's really going to mean is I'm going to watch 20 other movies.
Everything else but these.
Yeah, that's correct. And then Friday will come around and I'm like, well, shit, I need to watch these movies.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So, these were good. These were damn good movies.
Two thumbs up.
Well, that is this week. We will see you all next week on a podcast named Tim, and I'm sure I'll talk to you or see you at some point. Although I might see you less this week than normal.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll talk to you at some point.
Vacation.
That's right. Well, we'll see you next time here on a podcast named Tim.